everyone, to Black Talk Radio and Your Money, Your Matters, brought to you by the Cornerstone Credit Union League, Cornerstone Credit Union Foundation, and a whole assortment of others.
A whole assortment of others.
Oh, yeah. And certainly on the other side of this desk is sitting Todd Martin. So welcome. Hope you had a good weekend.
What?
It's called like basic.
I know. I'm outstanding. It was funny, as I was driving in, having my weekly meeting with Navicor Solutions, my organization, my nonprofit, and they were asking how things were going with the radio show.
Oh.
And I said we need to make sure we actually get this up on the website, that, and promoting for. Here we are in the middle of year six of Your Money, Your Matters.
I know it. You know, there needs to be a gong in here or something that we ring.
I'm still irritated. Every time I look behind folks that listen every week, you know, there's a picture of Rick from WISM.
Yep.
Look at that.
Yeah, long hair, paisley shirt, Fu Manchu mustache, the whole works.
And by the way, it says Peter McNeil.
That's exactly correct.
Peter McNeil, spread the rock and roll on the Radar Love Weekends on WISM. So,
that's exactly correct.
Actually, that shirt does look like you'd be spreading the love, my friend. Anyway, so every time I see that, it reminds me I need to get up a picture of me from 20 years ago.
Yeah, you should.
In my radio
put it
day.
Up there.
There you go.
Put it up there on the wall and put a circle around it like mine.
There you go.
Throw darts at it every once in a while.
And we will put all of your pictures up on the wall, too, especially if you want to dial in right now for us at 646-929-1020.
Mm-hmm.
Join in on Your Money, Your Matters. You can either dial in. You can listen that way. We'd, of course, love you to join in our conversation. Today we're going to continue on with home ownership. We're going to talk about about first-time home buyers and just the process of buying a home. But if you'd like to do that, talk about housing, talk about anything related to your money or your matters, dial in, press number one to raise
number
your digital paw. That lets Rick know that you're on. You want to join in on the call. Certainly we know many others of you don't listen live, but you download on iTunes, and that's okay. We love that you're listening to us any time of the week.
And they can chat with us if they would like. So the chat room is open. We're monitoring both, and you can pose a question or just get into the conversation, and we'll read that on the air. So, you know, please do spend some time, interact with us. This is a social media radio show, one that you do not need to have a battery-powered radio sitting out there on the beach listening to. You can listen to it over your iPhone if you like. And all you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com, money_matters, and you will find our webpage there on Blog Talk Radio, and then you can press the little listen key, and all of a sudden you're listening to us as well. So anywhere in the world, anywhere you want to be, you'd be on the beach in Florida or Dubai. Who cares?
There you go. There you go. So, and you could be in Dubai thinking, I want to buy a home. Cause, there you go. There's the segue. Now, so it's National Home Ownership Month, and which is why every June we do a series of our shows that are put on the various focuses of housing, whether it's buying a home, selling a home, renting a place, taking money out via a reverse mortgage, trying to prevent the loss of foreclosure, the home to foreclosure. Things you can do post-purchase to have a successful and sustainable living situation. So so today we want to get to the basics of buying a home. And before we do that, though, I'm going to talk about a home ownership tale that most people don't think about. When you buy a new place, you think about how romantic it is to have all this space. Inside, all that space outside, and what's the first thing you want to do when you get a brand new place, Rick?
Rip apart the master bathroom and replace it.
wait, that's if you buy an older place. If you buy a new place, it darn well better be exactly what you wanted. You don't want to do a renovation of a brand new build. All right, so besides making it your own structurally, then what else do you want to do?
Put a dog in the backyard.
Okay. We're getting closer. but by the way, we were not in Dallas a year when we got our first dog.
Really?
Yep. So
See?
So far check mark, check mark.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. What else
yeah,
do you
I
like
had
to
a
do?
Little, I had
yeah.
a little dog. We got that, put it out in the backyard so that it could get used to, you know, that this is where you do your dog business.
Oh, that's where I went wrong.
And part of that problem was is that it was teething and it chewed off the molding on the under part of all the windows on the outside. Mm. So
well, that's what we went wrong. We put the
dog in the
dining room, which meant that we would never dine in there ever again. So all right, so you've knocked off remodeling and getting a dog. What else?
Well, let's see. Besides, you know, putting up all of the pictures, deciding that you're going to buy a whole bunch of furniture.
You just got what I wanted you to queue up. Buying of the furniture.
Oh, let me tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this weekend, because our hardcore listeners know that I'm now not just a homeowner, but a renter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided that after over 6 months of sleeping on a couch.
Yeah, it's probably not a good idea.
That, yeah. Well, I don't know. I have shrunk, though, from 5'6 to 5'2. So I guess I've got a little proof of what this does to your spinal cord. Anyway, and all that back pain apparently wasn't a kidney stone.
And that little lever, don't pull that. It folds the whole thing back up.
So I decided this weekend to finally do the start of mattress shopping. Now, many of you would say, why would you mattress shop this weekend? Wasn't it the weekend previous that was Memorial Day?
Yeah, Memorial Day, a day to lay down and rest.
Or as I joke, Memorial Day, which is when everybody wants to buy a mattress, apparently.
Yeah,
now,
right.
So I started the process of shopping around for a mattress. And like I would any other consumer purchase, I went first to Consumer Reports.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a video of all the things you should be looking for in mattress. I went through all of their reviews, their Consumer Reports best buys,
mm-hmm.
not just for quality but for pricing as well, mm-hmm. because of course beds are very everybody has their own unique taste in what feels good to them. Some
mm-hmm.
people like a firm bed, some people like a soft bed, some people like plush and pillow topped. Some people like bases that move and do fold you up like an accordion.
Some people like water beds because of the wave motion.
There you go. Although I've got to be honest with you, I have not seen a water bed seller in the longest time. Are they still out there?
I would believe that they still are. I see pictures of them every once in a while on Facebook. Somebody's taking a picture of their cat on top of a water bed or some deal like that. But
I've not seen any.
Talk about parking a car on top of your in your bedroom. You better be on the first floor because on the second floor they really don't design them for water beds.
Ooh, that's a good
point.
And
that tonnage of water that's there.
So anyway, so I started doing my research, and then I went out, and they said, Consumer Reports said, keep in mind, there's almost always a sale on mattresses. If you find something that's at full list price, please walk away or be a very good negotiator. Because
mm-hmm.
they said, it's not like there's a good time of year to buy mattresses. They just use the holidays as incentives, like it's the Memorial Day month and a half long sale.
Mm-hmm.
That will move now into the 4th of July, get your mattress sale, which will then probably segue into a Labor Day sale.
That's right.
And then, of course, holiday sales. And, you know, So anyway, as I went store to store, I told the people, I said, well, I know you had a big Memorial Day sale that was continued through last week. Is that continued still? And they said, oh, well, the same sale is not going on right now. I said, oh, well, I'll be back next holiday season. And he goes, no. He goes, here's what we do. He goes, we always honor our prices and have a price match. He goes, so I would just go back to what we offered 2 weeks ago. I'm like, oh, so the sale's over, but you mm-hmm. can still go back. So
mm-hmm.
so once again, it, all you have to do generally is ask,
mm-hmm.
And you'll get. But we started shopping around, and I went from five or six different places. The hard thing, Rick, is it's pretty much the same four or five brands.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be like saying I'm going to buy a Toyota, and I said I'll just try a couple of Toyotas. Well, there's lots of different models of Toyotas. You can't just compare, you know, one versus the other. So what's funny is you go to this store. Well, they have four models of, I don't know, Stearns and Foster, and then you go to another store and they've got eight models of Stearns and Foster, none of which were the four you just tried. So
mm-hmm.
they all have different levels of quality and pricing, depending on the store and who the demographic that the store caters to, and you know the price point. So it's bad though, because at each place you could find a bed that you say, I could just go to sleep. You know, start yawning and
in there.
And what's funny is I went into Stonebriar Mall, and there's an actual store, a higher end experience store in the mall, and they spent like an hour walking you through the thing. We're gonna find your sleep number, as it would be. I think that's the name of the store. Anyway, so what's funny is apparently I literally fell asleep in the middle of the demo. and I woke up and I did the head nod thing. What just happened? And the guy looked at me. He goes, wow. He goes, you must really like this bed. And that's one of the few times I said, that's not a sales line. You must be right. I must really like this bed. To have fallen asleep in the middle of demo at the mall. So anyway, so I feel like it's the Godfather, and I'm now going to the mattresses. So anyway, so that was really fascinating. The reason I'm telling you all this is we saw price points from as low as $299, and I think what they do is they put like
old car springs and the cardboard over the top.
yeah, pretty much. To as high as $9,000. And the person said, this is the Cadillac of mattresses. And I thought, no.
I used Cadillac for $9,000.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a really good line to use. And it was interesting because Consumer Reports said there are many models that you can find below $1,000 will be just fine. But it depends on your interest and of course, so we're I'm looking at things that are between that $1,000 to upwards of $1,800. But then they're saying, but we've got bonuses and sale money that we can apply to it. And it was so fascinating. And it reminds me of car buying a little bit. It's like, let's get to the real price of a mattress is a mattress is a mattress, but they're all different.
You know, we're going to, in talking about mattresses and home buying and everything else, we have a person that's calling in from New York City, and they actually raised their little digital paw, so I'm going to bring them on the air and see if New York City would like, or thereabouts, you know, wherever the area code 347 is, and you are on the air with Blog Talk Radio and Todd and Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, how are you?
Hey, okay. Yeah, with the phone number issue, I am in New York City, but of course, you know, the way the phones work now, I should be anywhere. We can
that
buy numbers.
That's absolutely
anywhere.
Correct.
Yeah. I was calling regarding the concept of money, especially modern fiat currency, because it does seem as though a small group of people and certain bankers control much of the fiat currency that we use, and if that is the case, no matter how students and professors and families try to budget or try to invest, we don't control the common, product, so we're behind the eight ball. Could that be possible? And if so, would that then lead to more people considering setting up alternative economic structures that are outside that limited financial paradigm?
Well, wow, you know, this sounds like one of those conversations, like from a theoretical, that you go back to what happened in Europe when they all had to come to the consensus of we want to go to a euro, and some people say, well, what does this mean for the value of our existing currency, and how does that translate? Some countries would have a higher standard of living, and but there would then be a higher value on their dollars, and suddenly saying other countries saying, well, what does this mean? Does our money stretch as far if we convert over? And it's fascinating. So I know obviously you say a New York number, but you are you a world traveler? Or do you use multiple currencies in your life?
I use currencies that. Sometimes non-traditional, and yes, I have lived in many countries, so when I speak, I'm thinking of, you know, what I have, if not seen physically in existence, at least heard theorized in discussions, And the euro currency is also, in my opinion, a part of the problem, because what happened in the case of Europe and the European currency is they shut out Asia and Africa, et cetera. And so, in my opinion, it is just as bad as typical fiat currency. I think we need more people with a global perspective that realize we're one piece of dust in our galaxy to start to come together under our own flag, our own anthems, our own constitutions and currencies. Otherwise, you know, we have this me versus you type of situation in most regions. And I'm hoping that we can get humanity, you know, not just me, of course, a lot of people looking for a better world, and it's not going to happen with, you know, currencies that trump humanity.
Yeah, and I can certainly understand that. I think that it's something that is going to take probably generations, to be candid. If you think generations back, you know, several hundred years and what people were using for currency at that particular time, and then how we got into the banking system very early in the 80s centuries. I think it's going to be generations and generations from now before we ever get there. You know, you can go to the point even on a Bitcoin or something of that nature, where you're operating off of trades and credits. I think sometimes of the futuristic show Star Trek, where they did not have any money at all. They simply operated off of credits that they received for whatever labors that they produced, and everybody was producing something in the society, and therefore had certain trade credits that they were providing. So, you know, an interesting concept as far as money and value of things are concerned. And And certainly agree that in most societies that are trading in currencies of some sort, you have a top sphere of 0.5% or 1% of the population are really controlling the 99% of the people that are actually using the currency in society. I don't think the United States is abnormal in that sphere. I think that there's many countries that look very similar in the same way. Great Britain, France, Italy. We won't have to worry about Greece. They don't really have anything going there. you know, Russia, China, many others. Even though they have a different type of culture and a different type of society, a lot of the times when I see it from a currency standpoint, there's a small cadre of individuals that are kind of controlling the flow of the economy, and by controlling the flow of the economy, they're also controlling money. And I think, and I agree with you, we are a tiny speck in the universe, but I think at the point in time where it changes is when we start getting to Vega and realizing that there are people that are living on a planet around the star Vega, and we can now communicate with them and trade with them.
And you know, Rick, what you mentioned Bitcoin. I think is we've always seen innovation change the look of currency, and you know, currency was a way of really standardizing bartering.
Yeah.
You know, and so you would trade goods. You know, goods and services, and you would barter, and then they said, why don't we come up with a standard, and whether that was gold, whether that was coins, and then eventually other currencies. And it's funny, I was just at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas last week, and going through their little museum, you know, of the various forms of currency, and it goes back, you know, way beyond the United States, and showing coins from, you know, and types of currency from across the world. There's always innovation that moves it forward, and just as we're seeing on credit cards, some of them moving to the chip model, which is actually more common in Europe than it is in the United States, the chip and pin model. I would say that technology and really the internet really helps the global economy truly be a global economy. You could say, would we eventually go toward a standardized unit or a credit that that would be the same from all walks of life? problem would be there's very different costs of labor, and so how do you standardize if somebody's if the minimum wage here in the United States is different from how it is in West Africa or in Asia, and saying, well, a credit here or a unit here or a Bitcoin, it's not the same value. That would be an issue. The other thing is, just as you described, there's half a percent of the population in each country that probably sets up the banking system and the currency system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of the reasons why they're different in every country. and if they all came together, they'd say, well, we don't all need each other to run the currency system. Who gets pushed out? Who
mm-hmm.
gets pushed down the bottom feeders?
Yeah.
And so would people ever allow their position within that and controlling of currency to be diminished or washed away? So power, ego gets in the way. But I'm with you. I'd say we're still extremely young when you think about how the Internet has really brought all corners of the world together. And we do e-commerce, which allows you to buy and sell from all places in the world. So it would make sense. And for our caller, I think a great conversation piece of
mm-hmm.
at what point we do have a standardized type currency.
Mm-hmm.
So you queued it up on the floor. Do you have some of your own suggestions or maybe ways that you see in the future that it's going to happen?
Well, one way that's going to be a momentum for it to happen is actually not economic, but from the standpoint of pain, P-A-I-N. What I think more people will have to start recognizing, but not have to, if we want to make a better world, is that pain is one of the core human, inside of us, we all go through it. And if we look at the poorer regions on the world, there are tons of pain. People starving, kids dying every minute from malaria and curable diseases. If we came to that conclusion and said, look, are we going to look at college degrees as the value or pain as the value? That would totally be a paradigm shift, because we would look at elderly people who are in homes being abused, or we would look at certain ethnic groups and say, whoa, that's pain. I think that's at the foundation. And that will cut across religious and sexual differences and skin color and all that, just using that as kind of a core criterion for determining who gets certain resources. And when it comes to the actual currency, it's hard to implement, because if someone in Haiti is living on $1 a day and $5 a day is considered, whoa, that person is living large. However, in America, $5 a day, you might as well be, almost dead. People may think, well, why give the Haitians $10? They're happy with $5 living in a hut and having two slices of barbecue chicken. There's a problem, because we have rationalized in Western culture the pain of other groups and justify their subservient lower standards with economic terms and per capita income and other stuff, when pain should be the criteria. Oh, who's in pain? Oh, those folks there. Ah, okay. How do we adjust our wars or our economic indices so that their pain is negated or lessened? But it's going to be a tough sell, because people that have a better lifestyle, it's hard to convince them to care about other people when we've been conditioned. So this is beyond economics and finance. It's really at the root of religion and philosophy, psychology, sociology, anthropology. And unless those subjects are adjusted in tandem with the argument I present about the dangers of most fiat currency, it's not going to go through, because the average person in the West is not going to want to do it, and we have all the biggest weapons. So it's tough. It's going to take a multifaceted approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very good point that you raise, and I think it's certainly one that I even saw in the Wall Street Journal today when they were talking about people in nonprofits helping out individuals that don't have a whole lot. So there are nonprofit organizations that go out and get grants or funding to help people that are unemployed or underemployed or poor or destitute or homeless or whatever it might be, to take care of society. Part of the article also said, and it's what really caught my eye, is there is a portion of society that says, yes, I'm willing to put money into that as long as you keep them on the other side over here, and I don't have to go near them. And that's, you know, sort of an avoidance of everything else. So we certainly do appreciate your call, and thank you very much for participating.
Thank you. My name is Hotep Kenyatta. Can I say that I recently had meetings with many nonprofits, and even the nonprofit sector is floored. What we tend to have is a nonprofit, one that I met with a few weeks ago, that gets millions of dollars, but the Latino and Black community get about 5% of that. Nonprofit doesn't necessarily mean caring, sharing, loving, moral, ethical. It's basically another business structure that gets lots of tax breaks and doesn't have to give much to the people. So there's so many things to work on, in my opinion. But thanks for the opportunity. You all have a great show, and I'll keep listening.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I certainly appreciate it.
Yes, we do. And you know, it's interesting because we're both nonprofit organizations ourselves, and he's certainly correct from the standpoint of not all nonprofits are the same. I think of the collaboratives here in Dallas as Cornerstone and Navicor and my former organization. We worked in Dallas to looking at poverty issues here. You think about the ability to look beyond all that you see, and we often think about what's in our backyard. And a very, very narrow look, then you could think what's going on in your state and what's going on in your country. And then you say, what if we really looked and saying, how do we help not just those that we drive by on the highway that are homeless, but those that are dealing with starvation or poor medical care, you know, and really substandard living in other parts of the world, third world countries. And by the way, there are nonprofits that I know of in the United States that focuses on things like that, but does that mean the majority of all of our efforts have been there? No. And it'd be really fascinating looking and saying, we don't just need to look at our fellow citizens, you know, just here locally in our community or here in our country, but saying, if we truly looked at everyone as equals, and how do we raise the floor bar of what a meaningful life is, what a meaningful existence, and how to cover base living needs. So Hotep brought incredible points there.
And I think that it is a very, and the caller is correct, it's a very philosophical type of discussion that all of society would have to have in order to get to your end point of being able to take care of all of the people that are on this planet. You know, we're talking certainly several billions of people, I guess somewhere between 7 and 8 billion people that live on this planet. And they live in all different countries and all different cultures and all different languages and all different lifestyles, and trying to smooth all of that out so that, you know, it's everybody is living in perfect harmony. I don't know how you would do it. Certainly worth a brain trust getting together and trying to figure that out. But I think that, you know, it takes one person to get the stone rolling down the hill, and then it just keeps on perpetuating. And I don't know where it begins. I mean, I really don't.
All right, I'll give you the place where I think it begins.
Mm-hmm.
So you used the example earlier that you were saying, like sci-fi movies, like Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to coins. We'll go to sci-fi and another type movie, and it could be any movie. The moment that we have life beyond Earth is when all of Earth and all of humanity would actually be unified for the first time.
Yeah.
And you don't think of, in this case, we say, well, we're Americans or something. Mm-hmm. You say we're humans. Mm-hmm. And any human from any part of the Earth is we share a common bond, and we'd be fighting for our existence as humans, as opposed to whatever other life forms, which would truly be different. Right now we think of our differences, whether they're geographic, whether they're demographic, whether
mm-hmm.
they're cultural, religious, as he said. And so often we let the differences separate us. Instead you say, what's the common thread? Is that we all have heads with brains. We stand upright. We have a bipedal motion. We're
mm-hmm.
legs and arms and... if we had something else that was different from that,
mm-hmm.
we would probably suddenly say, how do we make sure that all humans are
mm-hmm.
not just from a country standpoint, or That'd be fascinating.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, and it brought to mind for me the movie Contact,
mm-hmm.
where we're traveling, we have received a message, mm-hmm. basically back from, and that's why I mentioned Vega. We have received a message back from a civilization, and they have given to the people on Earth a plan in order to be able to travel from one star system to another star system in a relatively fast period of time, which eventually this one person does.
Mm-hmm.
They get into a capsule. They are sent through a machine that the design was given to them, and what seems like seconds on Earth is actually 18 hours for the traveler, but they actually travel to other solar systems through various wormholes. This is Carl Sagan writing this stuff, you know, a genius of trying to think of what's happening in the universe. But I think that for 2 seconds in that movie, and what always makes me stop and think for a moment, is for 2 seconds in the movie, the time traveler reaches a planet around the star system in Vega, and you see a civilization on the planet, and she says two words, they're alive, and then it shifts to her traveling again to another location.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to believe that the experimentation of a human culture, as we have it on this planet, has been duplicated in other places,
mm-hmm.
just to see how well it's going to grow there. You know,
there you go.
We're not the sole planet that has life. I don't believe. I mean, there are people that believe that, but I think that's what I agree with you. I think that's what it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take a very cosmic and cataclysmic event.
Mm-hmm.
For us to realize that we have to have something a little bit different from an economic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's not within my lifetime. It's probably not within my daughter's lifetime, and it's probably not within many people's lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, potentially we'll get there, and I think a lot of the people that have written science fiction,
mm-hmm.
have indicated that,
yep.
this is the way society would eventually evolve.
Our luck, they would have visitors, they'd come down, they'd say, we're here to mine your precious resource. And we're thinking, what's that? And they say, oxygen. Oh!
Yeah, and there was a movie on that.
And there you go. And then you realize everybody has their own commodities. And then suddenly it's bartering and trading, and then we get to, well, what's your currency? Well, you're sending us...
Mm-hmm.
something that we can't imagine right now. Anyway.
Yeah, but I think, you know, even in talking with my daughter, and we were talking about home ownership,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of fallacies that I think that are going around that are in people's minds about the Generation Y or millennials.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any difference how people call them, Gen Y, millennials, same thing, almost. And I was reading some notes here that I brought in from the standpoint that there's a lot of people out there that think that Gen Yers will never own a home, and that's simply not true. And in fact, 25% of them actually own a home today.
Mm-hmm.
There's a percentage of them that rent homes, but 25% of them actually own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Urban Land Institute, along with Pew Research and many others, have been studying this for a very long period of time to see how this generation of our culture is changing things. And what we're finding is that it's not as much change as it is delay in some of the things that we're talking about. Certainly technology has changed a lot of us. Technology has changed the way we perform financial services today. But as far as millennials are concerned or Gen Yers are concerned, they believe, and I think the number, and I'm going to look it up while I'm talking, but they believe that about 95% of them believe that at some point in time they will own a home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Americans, mm-hmm. again, in respect to the caller that was here, 92% of them believe that they'll eventually purchase a home, is what the study was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And fully 70% of them feel that they'll be a first-time home buyer by the year 2020, which is in 5 years from now. So we can see that the leading edge, the 35-year-olds, are probably the ones that 25% of them, you know, that makes up the 25%. that are already homeowners, and we can certainly see that the potentiality will be that they're going to be buying homes between now and the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that speaks to our culture here in the U.S., because that's what was studied in the study, and that's what we kind of deal with mainly in our conversation here on Block Talk Radio. But I think that what it also says is that the housing industry, which pulls the economy of the United States forward, is just beginning to pull the economy forward. And so we have a lot of things to look forward to. We have not only, you know, new homes coming on market, but existing homes being sold and people retiring and going and living in some other environment. And maybe those that are like in the billion-dollar clubs, like Bill Gates has been doing with his money. Bill and Melinda Gates have been have formed a foundation to do a lot of really good work throughout the U.S. And Warren Buffett certainly has joined them into talking with people that have an excess amount of money. And excess being a whole lot. In Warren's case, he thinks anybody that can't live on $500 million a year needs to go back to school and learn how to, he's going to write a book on how to live on $500 million a year, and the rest of it you don't need. So he's talking about people putting them in a giant pool that they can do some good throughout the throughout this planet with that money. And so I think that we will see over a period of time, you know, Bill is about my age, and so, you know, he's probably, his foundation will live on beyond him, but for about 20 years or so, he's going to direct that money into very social causes across the U.S. Warren will be the same way, and there's a lot of other people that are joining them, not only in the United States, but all over the planet, that are putting money into these foundations and saying, we want to help other people out with these funds. So hopefully we can do some of those things.
Yep. So our conversation took
started with mattresses and went on with money systems.
So when it comes to home ownership, said we talk a bit about pre-purchase today. You and I bought at different times, and and I assume that probably in the next, I'll be like your study you just said, Rick. I bet that within 5 years I'm probably going to be buying another house. And anyway, so what's funny is a HUD HUD approved housing counseling agency at Navicor. We want to make sure people are always thinking about the steps when it comes to how much house you can afford and how to buy the right home, the right price, and not take on too much of an obligation. And certainly having an understanding of what's affordable is key. So sitting down with a housing counselor before you ever talk to your financial institution, I think, is a good thing to do, because somebody may tell you that you can borrow a lot more money than it would make sense for you to spend. And that was one of the key drivers for the housing crisis, the start of the recession that really started the plunge down, is a lot of subprime and Alt-A mortgages. People that bought way too much home. I know I've shared this story before, but the punchline when an old friend, a radio friend who was a mortgage lender, offered to get me a loan for six times my annual salary. And I said, "Your friend? You know, really?" But I said, you know, as a HUD agency, we would always recommend people look, as a guideline, you know, roughly around 3%, three times your annual household income would be a good price point for a home. So if you make $50,000 a year, look at a $150,000 home. If you make $100,000 a year, look at a $300,000, so on and so forth, or at least that being the mortgage. So ideally you have additional to put down. And that's a guideline. That's not a hard and fast, this is what's affordable. What it translates down, though, to is what the federal government considers affordable is that 31% of your monthly income going toward your housing. And you want to make sure it's affordable on a monthly basis where you're not house poor, where more than half of your money is going toward a house and utilities, and you barely have enough left for transportation, let alone, I don't know, food, health care, or beyond the basics, how to have fun with your life. You know, and then carrying other debts and expenses. So when it comes to figuring out how much you can afford, use that as a basic guideline. And again, it's a guideline. What impacts that is the stability of your income. What impacts that is the other locked-in expenses you have. So if somebody has a high car payment, that may change that ratio a little bit. If they have no car payments in the here and now, that may change that a bit. Like I've said, and my current family dynamic, my wife and I have not had a car payment in 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go buy a house assuming that I'm never going to have a car payment again, because those cars will eventually need to be replaced.
Yep.
So you think about what your future budget will be. Everybody has different expenses. You may have medical expenses that are much higher than normal. It depends on the size of your family and the resources needed for kids, and not just the food, but the utilities for having a household of 19 versus a household of 4 versus a household of 2. So you think about your income and your existing expenses, and then how those expenses would change as you go into a home. And you really try to forecast a budget and say, all right, with that budget and looking at a home with principal and interest, also the taxes, also the insurance, also if you're in a homeowner association fee, a neighborhood, what the total cost would be. And then you say, if I'm doing this on a 30-year mortgage, what does that break down to, and is that truly affordable? Again, not how much money can I borrow, but what can I truly afford given my income and my resources? That's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know your budget, that's when you start playing like you're on the show House Hunters on HGTV.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are somebody that's looking to buy a house, I would recommend you you get familiar with that show. And what they do is in 30 minutes, you follow a couple in a city. It's a different city every episode. And in 30 minutes, they see three homes. You get to see the give and take between the family, what's important, what they can put aside. And oftentimes they're faced with the fact of, this is the house we want, if only it was $80,000 cheaper. And, of course, it's not. And they say, well, now how are you reconciling that? What is your zone of agreement? And you're negotiating to what is acceptable. But seeing other people go through that will help you as you start to look out. Once you know how much money you have, and you eventually will go to your credit union or another financial institution, you'll get pre-approved, so you'll truly know what you can afford, because it's one thing to know what's affordable. It's another to know that you can get a mortgage for that amount, and then you get approved. That's based on your credit. Another reason why we want you to sit down with a HUD-approved housing and credit counseling agency to make sure that you're positioned to qualify for a mortgage and that you're in position to succeed, that you're not going to be paying an arm and leg and fees and high interest because you've got poor credit. But once you've got that in place, you shop around and you look in neighborhoods and you look in your city, or you look in other parts of the country or other universes, as we discussed earlier, but saying what can you truly afford, or what affords you the experience you want.
Yeah.
So Rick, when I moved here from Atlanta 7.5 years ago, we were thrilled to see that the cost of living was relatively similar, but there was no income tax in the state. So people said, well, you've got a lot more money to spend because of income tax. Well, the trick is they make it up in property taxes here, and the property taxes were much higher in Texas than they were in Atlanta. And as we moved up in house, and we moved up in school district as well, and being up in Collin County, as we both live, the better the school district, the more you should expect to pay in taxes that support that school system. So there was a bit of a sticker shock when we got to the price point for the house, but we didn't. Then we saw what the taxes were going to be, and for some people that would be staggering. The concept of $800 or $900 a month that are your taxes and insurance that you put aside, or your just taxes, and you're like, wow, that's a lot. Some people don't pay that much in mortgage in other parts of, or rent in other parts of the city. But you figure out what the total costs are, what the cost of living is, and how far your dollar will stretch. And when we found out that we wanted to live in Collin County, we looked at 82 homes in 9 days. My family, we looked in primarily in Frisco and Plano, and a couple dots off the map, but pretty much in those areas. And you saw what the market would bear, was a fascinating time because we bought right at the start of the recession. So we moved in December of 2007, which is the official designation, the start of the recession. We didn't find that out until late in 2008 when all the economists say, wow, we've had several quarters of negative GDP. That means we've had such shrinkage and we're in recession. And then, of course, everybody else followed suit with...
Economists are great backcasters.
Yes.
Forecasters, but backcasters they're great at.
Yeah, so how do we deal with that? Let's have lots of layoffs at corporations. We'll deal with falling interest rates, which means you're not getting the same returns as a saver. But there's trouble with the economy, so the stock market was falling, property values start falling, the world was falling, the sky was falling. So property values fell, we got a sweetheart of a deal buying a home. But it was literally so fluid that each day we would say, wow, why is this home priced at this point? Another one is here. And then you're saying, wow, their prices are falling by the week. People was in a panic, and property values were in a free-for-all. Whereas now, property values are on the rise across the country, and depending on the demand and supply within a certain area, and as they've always said for real estate, location, location, location drives that, you're seeing property values go way up. So you need to see what your dollar can afford, and does it meet your needs?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when my family moved here, as I said, our first priority was school district, and our realtor said, you're going to be in Plano or Frisco. And they said, most likely based on the age of your kids, because we were a young family at the time, they said, a lot younger families are in Frisco than Plano, which they said Frisco is basically Plano 20 years in arrears.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, so we think if you want to be with families your age, a lot of families your age, you're probably going to end up in Frisco. But we looked in Plano and Frisco, and saw all these homes within a 9-day period, and that way you could know exactly how much money, how much house your money would buy, and then we started negotiating. We started putting bids down, and on the 10th day, we bought a home.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fascinating. Now, it's not that the purchase is done at that point. Then we had to go out and you get inspections, you get appraisals. You want to make sure that you're not buying a money pit. We're doing a lot of movie references, but there's a great movie, The Money Pit, with Tom Hanks.
Great,
and
love that movie.
Yeah. So anyway, you want to make sure your the inside matches the outside, but all the electronics, all the equipment, the machines, the AC, the plumbing, the electrical, that this all is standard, that the house is not being eaten up by insects, but that there's not major repairs that are needed. You work with your insurance agent to make sure that this is an insurable area. You're not in a flood zone, as we talked about last week. You go through all that, and it takes a little while before you actually get to closing. And once you've negotiated on everything else, and you've done your walkthroughs, and if there's any punch list things that need to be repaired, you have them done. But you get to closing, and you're shocked when. It was a very short process. It was 6 to 7 weeks, and we found ourselves moving halfway across the country. And it's so fascinating when you think how fast you can make the largest purchase generally you'll ever make in your life until the next time you buy a home, at which point that generally will be the largest purchase you'll make in your life. Why? Because as we always hope to better our situation, generally the next house will be bigger or more expensive or nicer than the last one, until you get to a point of retirement where then you say you may want to dial back your housing and recapture some of that money, capitalize that back into your retirement savings or what you live your remaining years out on. So you got to remember that a home is a great investment. It's not just a roof over your head, but generally it's the greatest path to asset building and equity building. So you want to be smart, not just about where you want to live, but is this a good place to park your money, all your down payment? So anyway, there's so much to cover. And what I would say is rather than us trying in the final 10 minutes to fill in the holes here, I would always encourage people, go to your local HUD housing counseling agency, my former organization, my current organization. They both do regular Saturday classes, 8-hour classes that you'll get a HUD certificate for, which some lenders will actually give you a discount on basis points on your mortgage. Other products, or let's say down payment assistance programs, you'll be required to have a HUD certificate that shows you've gone through pre-purchase counseling and education. Mm-hmm. But the 8-hour classes, you will spend an hour talking about money, the costs of home ownership, talking about mortgages, and the different products there. You'll budgeting for that. You'll spend another about credit, how you qualify for those said mortgage products, and how to seek out a good financial institution, how that process works. And then generally we would spend an hour each with a realtor, talk about the process of searching for a home. Generally an hour and a half with an actual lender would come and talk about products, talk about getting pre-approved, and the process of paying down your mortgage and how that works, the legal ramifications. You spend time with an appraiser, an inspector, an insurance agent, a closing company, or a title attorney.
Mm-hmm.
We would generally have somebody from Fair Housing to make sure that if you've got issues, or you feel you're being taken advantage of or being defrauded, it's an incredible education. It's generally free, or maybe it could be low cost at a few organizations, but an 8-hour certificate. I would also recommend people go for the one-on-one counseling, and a good housing counselor will go through your entire budget, and they'll look at your current housing needs, your transportation, your utilities, your food, your medical care, clothing, everything else that you're
mm-hmm.
doing, help you get a third-party objective, not your
mm-hmm.
lender, but somebody will say, this is what we think would be an affordable amount of home or a housing payment on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit down though, talk about your credit, how much loan will this probably set you up for, and at what interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've never done what's the difference on credit, what it impacts on your cost of borrowing, go to myfico.com, myfico.com. This is the Fair Isaac or the FICO consumer corporate side, and every day on the consumer side they update each day. And they can do it based on your state or just the national averages, based on your credit score, what your interest rate should be, and then you type in the dollar amount, the size of your mortgage, and they'll say, on a 30-year rate mortgage, here's what your payment's going to be. And they'll show you that the lower your credit score, the higher your interest rate, the higher the payment. And it's a huge eye-opener for folks. But if you don't think there's a difference between 3 and 3.2, or if you don't think there's a difference between 3.2 and 4.2, you can draw it out and you can see it's significant.
Mm-hmm.
And based on rates the last few years, a low score and a high score can translate to well more than six digits, well more than $100,000 over the life of a mortgage, just because you bought when you had poor credit, when you had good
mm-hmm.
credit. So I would highly encourage you, sit down with a housing counselor before you sit down with a financial institution. Once you're done with that, you want to shop around financial institutions as well. And as always, if you're a member of a credit union, you're generally going to get the best potential rates
mm-hmm.
sitting down. But talk to the lender at your credit union. Shop around, though. Shop around. If you're at a bank, shop around a bunch of places
mm-hmm.
Because everybody's rates are different. Keep in mind that that the nonprofit credit union, when they have profits at the end of the year, that's generally returned to consumers in lower interest rates, lower borrowing rates. That's why being a member of a credit union is different than being a customer of a,
mm-hmm.
of a for-profit institution. But I'd say shop around, just as we'd say for anything else, shop around to make sure you're getting the best absolute deal
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, to begin that whole process, to be candid, I wouldn't, if I was sitting around, in my living room or my kitchen and decided, gosh, today I think I'm going to go out and buy a home. The first thing that you really need to do is to understand, A, as Todd was mentioning, can you afford it? But B, what are you going to put down for a down payment? Because although there are commercials that I've heard that allow people to come in and put zero down, and I heard one the other day, which was 3% down, something of that nature. you know, first you got to have stellar credit to get that. But the second part of it is you would like to put down as much as you could so you don't go upside down in this home. And if you put 3% down and the market changes a little bit, you know, it's not always going to go up as we experienced, and it goes down a little bit, all of a sudden that little 3% that you put down, basically you end up upside down in your home very quickly. And one of the protection mechanisms that you have is not only walking in with cash to put on the table, but it also, by walking in with cash to put on the table, you are basically putting skin in the game. The lender knows that you're putting skin in the game, is willing to talk to you a whole lot more about fees that you may or may not have to pay, interest rates that you can get a little bit lower because you're putting so much down on the home. So, you know, don't think that you that, you know, as soon as you gather up through, you know, the money that you have for 3% down, you should rush out and buy a home at that point in time. I would strongly recommend that you you take a real strong look at it and decide, if I want to reduce down my mortgage, what's the best way to reduce down my mortgage? Not have as much that I am borrowing. So one way that you do that is by having a good down payment, a good strong down payment. So if at some time in the future you decide that you are going to be a homeowner, I would suggest that you strongly start putting money away now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The more you have, the better off you'll be. Mm-hmm. If you can get to 20% down, by the way, you'll be able to avoid private mortgage insurance,
mm-hmm.
which is not the insurance that protects your home. It protects the lender.
It protects the lender, yeah. You don't get a thing out of it.
No.
This is like trying to collect on your own life insurance.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. so just like the higher your credit score, the lower your cost of borrowing, the more down payment you have down, the more skin you have in the game,
mm-hmm.
and the less you have to worry, somebody else has to worry about you defaulting. So
yep.
So that's good. The other thing, like I said, watch House Hunters on HGTV. They do the thinking for you. It helps you figure out what are your priorities for a home,
mm-hmm.
and how many bedrooms, bathrooms, what you're looking for as far as commute time to work or amenities within a community,
mm-hmm.
Your proximity to shopping or restaurants, place of worship, certainly your employer, to job opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But the amenities of the build, how much storage space you have, the niceness of the kitchen and or
mm-hmm.
the size of your yard.
Yeah.
I remember, Rick, I was shocked at how mm-hmm. small the lot sizes were when I moved from Atlanta to Dallas.
And then you realize how hot it is to mow the lawn in the summertime.
And I said, why would I want a yard anyway?
Yeah.
But we're going to continue mm-hmm. the next several weeks. We're going with mm-hmm. different topics of home ownership for home ownership. Again, we what a really cool... we had a little segue in our conversation, but a fascinating philosophical
yeah.
one. So
yeah.
You never know what you're going to get each week with Your Money, Your Matters. We're glad that you all listened and joined us, your friends from Cornerstone Credit Union League, Cornerstone Credit Union Foundation, and Navicor Solutions to talk a little bit about Your Money, Your Matters.
And for Rick and Todd, yeah. we will see you in 1 week.
Look at that yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. Money working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing, it's free. Money working, that's the way you do it. Because them guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a tombstone on your little finger. Maybe get a pistol on your thumb.